Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of In the Crease with Danny and Kevin, a coast-to-coast discussion of D2 men's lacrosse. I'm your co-host, Kevin Stenstrom, and with me, as always, is the big kahuna, Danny Moran. Aloha.
Aloha.
How's it?
Stenstrom. Again, coming live from Hawaii again. A second podcast from Hawaii.
Yeah, that's
what
why
you doing, my friend.
That's why I had to bring back the big kahuna. I'm out here on the island of Oahu on a little bit of travel. You would have loved it, Danny. We actually were here for a benefit concert for a friend of ours that passed away. He was a recording engineer. 8 hours, 2 to 10 on Sunday, more than 15 different artists, everything from jazz to rock and roll to blues to Hawaiian music. The acts were just phenomenal. It was just fantastic. All for a man by the name of Milan Bertosa, who's done over, participated in, or recorded or produced over 700 albums.
Wow. Sounds interesting. Eight hours of music. That's cool, man.
Yeah, you would have loved it. You would have loved it. But 100%. I digress.
Well, how's Hawaii anyway? Is it nice out there? Because right now,
well, let's just say as we're
snowing sideways, all right,
and you're going through a nor'easter. It is raining here, Danny. It is raining here. So there you
go. It's good. Good. I got a little bit.
But it's pretty cool. So you wake up on a Saturday morning at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. You get your cup of coffee. You start watching D2 lacrosse. Is there anything while listening to the waves of the Pacific Ocean? It ain't too bad.
I got nothing to say. I actually have a lot to say, but I'm just going to close the door on that. I'm glad you're having a good time, and I'm glad you get to see some of the games out there. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, it was great. So, and we'll get to that in the week in review, but why don't we start off with the top 10 roundup?
The top 10 roundup. Oh, I missed my horn. I'm screwed everything up.
Where's the music?
My fanfare. Hold on. All there right. That's go. that crack research team working in the back there. Okay, the top 10 roundup for this week. Number one, Lemoyne remains undefeated. They beat Robert Wesley in 11-3. Number two, Mercyhurst. They remain undefeated at 4-0. They beat Chestnut Hill, Kev, 11-2.
Yeah.
We thought that would be a little bit maybe more competitive, but yeah, Mercyhurst
just took it to them. Yeah.
Put a beating on them boys. Number three, Mercy beat Wilmington 11-9, and they're at 5-1, Mercy. Number four, Adelphi beat Caldwell 19-1, Kev.
Wow.
They sit at 5-0. They're undefeated. Number five, Lenoir Rhine beat number 15, Florida Tech, 20-11, and the Bears sit at 6-1. Tampa back on the winning ways after losing a big game the week before. They beat Palm Beach Atlantic 19-4, and the Spartans are 6-1 at number six. Number seven, Rollins lost to unranked Colorado Mesa 15-10. Kev, we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
one.
We will.
And Rollins is now sitting at 5-1. Number eight, the Wingate Bulldogs beat number 17, Newberry Wolves, 16-14, in a kind of a thrilling kind of game.
Yeah.
And the Bulldogs sit at 5-1. Number nine, UIndy beat Walsh 20-4. And the Greyhounds are at 5-1 as well. And St. A's beat number 18, Bentley, rather handily, Kev.
Yeah.
17-2. The St. A's sits at 2-0 now. So that's your top 10 roundup.
All right, that was good. I like it. I like it, Danny. I love the top 10 roundup. Kind of gets us into the mood. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Get you started. Kickstart the heart, right?
That's right. So now we move on to the week in review. And Danny, I kind of look at this one. There was a bunch of kind of chess matches this week. Some surprise finishes. And I think one real barn burner. So you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. Who do you got? Who's on the docket?
Well, let's start off the game that was the first kind of in the week. It was played before our last podcast came out, but after we recorded it. So that was the Lewis Belmont Abbey game.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit of a surprise for you, I think, because I think you had Belmont Abbey in that one.
I did. I picked Belmont Abbey. I said these two teams were really kind of matched up even, and I felt that way. But, man, Lewis came out, and they were just really good that night, Kev. They really played well, both offensively and defensively. And Lewis wound up beating them 14-8. Did you see the game?
I actually was at a work event all night. I could not watch it. But I think I called this one. I agree with you. I think this is the one I called that it was going to be a one-goal game with Lewis winning. But I'll tell you what, this is a mentor-protege matchup with Coach Peruzzi and Coach Barrett, his former mentor. I think the real difference came down to the scoring in the second quarter where Lewis was on top 7-2. Because if you look at the stats, the team stats, Belmont Abbey led in almost all the categories. Shots, 42-36. Turnover, they only had 19 to Lewis, 22.
Yep.
Cause turnovers, they had 13, Lewis had 9. Face-offs, 15-8. Now, Lewis, I think it's, even though the offense scored 7-2, I think it's their defense stepped on up, and sometimes they had more ground balls, 34-28, and their saves. They had 19 saves to Belmont Abbey's 10.
Their goalie, what's his name, the goalie?
Rhea Rath, 70% save percentage for that game.
That's a phenomenal game from Rhea Rath. Absolutely phenomenal. And the usual cast of characters for Lewis, man. They put biscuits in the baskets. Baden Boyanko had 3-3, six-point game. You had Zach Buttlemeyer had 3-1. Drew Andre had 2. Evan Clement had 2. And Dylan Kendrick and Dom Torello split the faceoffs. So they did pretty good. But Belmont Abbey's got that kid Trey Childers had a great game. He had 5 goals for the Crusaders. And Davis McCulley had 2-1. And you know what? Thomas Sullivan had 10 saves. I mean, he did not play a bad game in goal either. But you know what? Lewis was just a little bit better, a little bit quicker, a little bit faster. And came out on top. It was a good game.
Lewis is on the move, which we talked about that way back in the conference preview, and they're headed that way. And nothing against Belmont Abbey. This was going to be a tough game regardless. So, you know, we'll see where I think Belmont Abbey, like we talk about with other teams, is going to be fine. They're going to be fine in Conference Carolinas, and they'll go from there. I think, though, from a national rankings and NCAA, they probably wanted this game, and I'm sure Coach Barrett isn't as happy with the final result.
No, he's definitely not happy. Yeah. But Peruzzi's got those boys back in the top 20 again. So
they've
been right. They've been knocking on the door. You know, they're right there. So they have to keep up their winning ways. You know, teams like Belmont Abbey's going to help their cause.
Yeah. Okay. What games do you have?
Well, did you see the Limestone Anderson game? Because that was one of the games I said that was going to be a good one. And Kev?
Oh, it was a barn burner.
Right. That was a good game, man. That was a good game. Anderson beat Limestone in an overtime game. And you love those overtime games. Yeah. It's so exciting. Yeah. Anderson pulled it off 15-14. Limestone gave Anderson everything they could handle. Kev, this game had like 6 ties and 5 different lead changes.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was crazy. If you look at the first quarter, I had a note that said both offenses were moving the ball really well. This just in the first quarter. It was Anderson, though, that could capitalize on it, and Limestone couldn't. And it was 4-1 after that first. But Limestone comes storming back in the second quarter to tie it 8-8 at half.
Yeah. Zach Terry had 7 goals.
Yeah.
The Limestone. 7 goals, man.
Yeah. So it was funny because it was, like you said, it was just a back and forth game. Really, really even. At one point, even, did you see that time when Limestone had 3 guys in the box?
Yep.
They were down three men and they held serve with three guys down. But then you go, you know, then you're down two. And Anderson, you can't let Anderson have that much time.
No. No.
And so they finally scored and but still no one, even with that, no one was really dominant. They were just, it was so well even, you know, it was so even. And I think the other thing that Limestone did a really good job was neutralizing Cam Weeks. Cam Weeks would win faceoffs, would win the draw, but they would get sticks down there and they would push and they would even not only the faceoff specialist, whoever they had lined up there, but their wing play.
Yeah.
And they'd win ground balls.
You know, I'm wondering if Cam is 100%. I'm wondering because, you know,
yeah,
the kid is so good. They throw him out there with one leg and he's going to win. He's going to win a good percentage of his faceoffs. I just don't know if he's 100% still. To me, doesn't look like 100%. But you know what? Anderson's a good team. They did a lot of good things. The second half was about as even as you could get the second half, right? Yeah. Each team scored two in the third and four in the fourth, you know? Yeah. But I'll tell you, Zach, if it wasn't for Zach Terry, man, he went on a tear. He
scored
four consecutive goals for the Saints and to tie him. And then he hit one to put them up one. So that kid was keeping them in and they traded goals and Zach Terry struck again twice to give Limestone a 2-goal lead with 8 minutes left. It was like a pretty good game, you know? And then Anderson tied on a Raiden Bowdrin goal. And then Bushnell put one in the overtime for the win. And it was as good as a game as you can get.
I'll tell you what, that was a great overtime. If you remember, Cam Weeks wins the faceoff, goes right down, takes a shot. It was a good shot, just missed. So now he didn't have backup. Limestone gets the ball. I'm thinking, okay, here comes Limestone. They're gonna put the biscuit in the basket, and they couldn't. And then, like you said, Braden Bouchot, who, oh by the way, had a great split dodge to get open and in that shot, and he was the guy in the game before that took over the faceoff position for Cam Weeks and had such a good game. So he's really contributing to his team any way he can. It was really kind of cool. And he ended up with a hat trick. Yep. Rain Boudron had 4 goals and 1 assist. But I'll tell you what, the other guy played really well. Both goalies played really well. Hunter Klosterman.
Klosterman's good, man.
And he was playing for the injured Joey Heckel. He is not their starting goalie.
I know. He's pretty good, though. He did a damn good job because, you know, there's scorers all over the field for Limestone with Mike McGarry and Connor Brower and Nate Sens and Zach Terry. Those guys can score. He did a good job.
Yeah. So, and here's what's interesting. So there was a great game. And Corey Lyons had 16 saves as well. He played a really good game. It was just one of those things.
He's a good goalie, too.
But here's what's really interesting. As I was watching, sipping my coffee and watching this game, I had the Wingate game on my phone. And I'll tell you what, Danny, it was like a carbon copy until the end. I'm watching the Limestone game. The score is 6-3. Wingate, Newberry, 6-3. Limestone, second half, score 14-12. Wingate, Newberry, scores 14-12. The only difference was in the final results was the higher ranked team, Wingate, pulled it out, but Newberry played a good game in that one too.
Yeah, Newberry's a good team. We talked to Coach last week on the podcast, and he knew he was going into the gauntlet. And you know what? They're man up. Newberry's man up is really good.
They went 4-for-4.
Yeah, they're really good. I think they're number one in the country. But you know, Wingate, you know, that offense and just too many guys to cover. Just too many guys can score. You know, it's just too many.
It's true, but I think also from the defensive side, and some of the cause turnovers were guys on offense that did it too. I can't give it all, but when they were riding,
you're right.
They had 8 cause turnovers versus Newberry's 4, and I think that was key for this game. That was another good game to watch. It really was. What else do you have on the list?
So the other games I had, well, to be honest with you, Kev, they weren't on the docket to watch, but because I have absolutely no life and nothing else to do, I watched a couple of games that normally I probably wouldn't have watched. So I wound up watching the UAH Alabama Huntsville Maryville game. Let me tell you something. That game was as good a game as you could possibly get. It was complete quality lacrosse from two Division II teams. That was, first of all, it was wet. It was rainy.
Oh, yeah.
It was grass. Well,
remember, you texted me about this game. You said, I'm watching the Alabama Huntsville Maryville game. And I just had gotten back to the hotel. We were doing something. I'm like, oh, crap, I'm going to turn it on. And I got to watch the whole fourth quarter. And you're exactly right. It was a great game.
You know, here comes Maryville coming out from the Midwest out to the East Coast and doing that East Coast run that all those Midwest teams do. And it's not easy for those guys. They spend a week on the road. They're eating, you know, stale bagels at the hotel in the morning and that kind of thing. But it's not easy. But Maryville, that was some game. They pulled it out in overtime, Kevin. UAH pulled it out in overtime, yeah. 14-13. Maryville, it was a fun game to watch. Again, in the rain, wet, misty, on a grass field. There was kids with mud on their uniforms. It was like one of the old school. There was a lot of checking going on. The crowd was going nuts on every ground ball, on every score, on every move. It was just had that exciting game. Maryville went out and went on after the one. They were winning 5-4. They were winning by one after one. And it was a 7-7 game at halftime. Okay. There was six different ties and seven different lead changes in this game. UAH was leading 12-11 with 3:28. Ben Foster from Maryville tied it with 2:45. They had a double man down. It was crazy. Maryville goes man up and Reed Irsay buries the biscuit to give Maryville the lead. With 27 seconds left in the game.
This is when it got real. I mean, not that the game was good before that, but here is where it got crazy. I'll let you continue. I was ready to just, all right, we'll go have, you know, lunch or whatever now. I'm like, it's just, but no.
The last 2 minutes and 45 seconds left. So Reed Irsay buries a biscuit, gives Maryville a lead with 27 seconds. UAH's Hunter Coleman wins the clamp, sprints downfield, hands Kyle Lightwood, perfectly feeds Reed Bender for the tying goal with 9 seconds left.
Yes, yes.
It was unbelievable. And then and overtime, Brody Phillips hit the game winner to give the Chargers a nice win. But it was a rowdy, chippy game, wet field, damp, misty conditions, mud on the field. It was just had everything. It was so exciting, Kev. It was such an exciting game. And got to give a shout out to both of those teams, Alabama Huntsville and Maryville, for such an entertaining evening. It really was a great game.
If people can get to that stream in a replay, they should do it.
It was awesome. It was awesome. It was awesome. You're like, it was like ground balls and getting kicked out and guys getting pushed out and just, it got chippy and physical and oh, it was great. I loved it. Yeah, I loved every second of it.
Okay. So I've got one and then we can get to a few others, but I know you watched this game and I did too. And it's Colorado Mesa against number 7 Rollins. And Colorado Mesa pulls it out 15-10. They were playing at Westminster's Dumpke Field. And I'll tell you what, Colorado Mesa, this is another one of these chess matches, Danny. Colorado Mesa did not put on the clinic that they did when they played Rockhurst, but they moved their chess pieces around to really win. And they played a very, very smart game.
Yeah, it was a good game. I mean, it was two really good teams. The mountains in the background.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful field. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I said to my wife, look at the Rocky Mountains in the background. It was just gorgeous. But and that was at Westminster's field.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a good game. I mean, I just felt it was kind of like slow paced a little bit. it was kind of like a slow down, grind it out kind of game. But, you know, Colorado Mesa was impressive, I have to say, because, you know what, Rollins can score. They got scorers there. And I felt that Colorado Mesa's defense was making them take bad shots and forcing them out of their comfort zones. What'd you think?
That was my note right here. They held Rollins to only 26 shots, and only 22 of those were on goal.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Mesa's defense just, maybe it was just not Rollins' day offensively, because they looked a little bit out of sorts, because I've watched three games of theirs so far, and they've been looking really good on offense and really good on defense. It just, maybe it was the trip out there. Maybe it was the elevation. Maybe it was a combination of all of it.
I had that note too, but then on the backside, I'm thinking, you know what? Good on Colorado Mesa, because they have to do it all the freaking time. So it's like, and hats off to Rollins for going out there.
Oh, 100%.
Because, you know, it gives those guys got to do the travel like Westminster does. Yeah. And Dylan Checkets, he had 15 of 23 faceoffs, which I think was a critical advantage for Colorado Mesa to maintain possession.
Yeah, he's really good. That's a big reason too, man. Dylan Checkets just getting possession after possession. Hey, Jed Brumman had three. Sergio Paleo had two. Drew Eckelman had two. Jamie Stanky had two. Dylan did what he did. And Calvin Doucette had 12 saves for Colorado Mesa. Pretty solid game.
Yeah, they spread the ball around on offense. They had 9 different scores. That really helped them.
You know what? And Rollins spreads the love too, man. Justin White had two. Grant Hanson had 2-1. Willem Mets had 2. Harrison Key had 2. Thomas Garvin was 5. What did he do with the faceoff? And Ketcher Dorion had 11 saves. I mean, they're solid. They're a solid squad. But Rollins got tripped up a little bit.
I'll tell you what. The game was closer than what the score said at the end, because Rollins, you talk about chess matches, they were risking it at the very end in the fourth quarter, putting out and pressing. The goalie comes out. Shea came out to try to cover folks, and they got a few easy goals, with the open net. So I'll tell you what, Colorado Mesa did what they had to do, what they wanted to do, you know, beating a top 10 team like Rollins. And now they got to keep going. Now they go to the Florida Swing and they take on Florida Tech and Tampa.
Well, you know what? They look good, Colorado Mesa. I think they look good, man.
I don't 100%.
You know what? They're making noise. I think that, you know, that's a team you got to watch out for. Florida Tech's going to, you know, have a tough time against, you know, you got.
Yeah.
And then if Dylan Checkets, if they can go play Tampa and Dylan Checkets can get possessions for them, who knows what can happen there.
Right. So,
Colorado Mesa is a good team, one to watch out for. They can give teams a fit, 100%. They got players there, Kev.
Yeah. So who else? I got a few others. Who else do you have that you saw? I got a couple shout outs there.
Yeah, the other games that I saw, again, wasn't on our games to watch, but because I have no life, I was just flipping through watching games. And you know what? St. Leo Flagler played Saturday night at St. Leo, and it was great, man. It's a good game. You know, Flagler just beat Mount Olive the week before, 14-11. That was a big program win for Flagler. This is only their second year, you know, and Kevin, they have athletes, man. Flagler, this kid, Tyler Douglas, 4 goals. He's a good athlete. He's a good player. Logan Tobias at 2. Antunas Mikuzis.
That's a good name.
Antunas Mikuzis. He had 2 goals and an assist. Trace McDonald had 1 and 2. And you know what? Flagler looked pretty good out there. But St. Leo's got some players, too, and that was a good game. It was 4-3 after 1. It was 8-6 at halftime. Flagler was winning. Yeah, man. And then St. Leo, 5 goals in the third. They kind of poured it on, and that was the difference. Justin Williams had 4 goals and an assist. John Rauchy had 2 goals. Guy Bistro, who's always a good player for St. Leo, always a good player. He had 2 goals. Greg Palmer had 2 goals. And you know what? Flagler outshot St. Leo 49-34. But you know what? It was an exciting, fast-paced game. like I said, Flagler led 8-6 at half, and St. Leo just rattled off 5 consecutive goals in that third, made 11-8. And it was just an exciting, really good game to watch, a 2-goal game that could have went either way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, just because they don't have a number in front of their, in their name, you know, if they're not in the top 20, doesn't mean that these good games don't exist, because that 100%. St. Leo, that St. Leo Flagler game was good. These kids were going after it. When they realized what was at stake at the end of this game, it could have been anybody's game, and they started playing hard, man. And the same thing with the UAH Maryville game. That was an exceptional game. So folks out there in podcast land, you've got to watch some of these other teams. These boys can fall.
In fact, I've got 3 to go through. Quick shout outs on 3 of them. First off, one we should have marked for this week coming up because it's another Mentor protege, and that was DeUville against Felician. Coach Wilson of DeUville pulls out a win against his former mentor, Coach Bonicum of Felician. Tristan Engelhart and Brady Ruffalo both had 5 goals, and Stefano Evans had 4 goals and 4 assists for DeUville. That is an effort by those guys. They outshot Felician 49-40, and they won the ground ball contest 38-26. I didn't get to watch the game, but look at DeUville now has got a few wins in their ledger this year, and they're moving on. And it was a great game and a great win for them. Another one, Danny, and this one we did talk about, was Dominican against UDC. I thought it was going to be a close game, but hats off to the Chargers. They won 21-8, and it really was. They went on a 7-0 run in the first quarter and a total of 9-0 run overall. But guess what? Even though they won by a lot, they UDC actually won a lot of the stats. 47 ground balls to Dominican's 27. They had more saves, 22 versus 15. So their goalie, Najee Wilson, had a good game. But the real problem was Dominican outshot UDC 64-33. So, and you've got that many shots coming at you.
64 shots. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So great game.
That's a long day between the pipes, man.
Great game by Dominican, but UDC's got some things that they can hang their hat on and try to build from. The last game I've got, Danny, and we talked about this one, and it was a surprise because we both picked Lake Erie. Lake Erie against St. Michael's, and St. Mike's won 18-9. And remember, St. Mike's had 2 games canceled, postponed, and there was no rust on this team. Let's see. Sebastian Simonson scored 3 times during the second quarter when they had a 4-0 run, and that kind of put them up. And he had a total of, I think, 5 goals, and Drew Collins had 6 assists. Then St. Mike's scored the final 5 goals. So along with winning 14 cause turnovers, which was probably a key to their victory, and they split they had 2 goalies. Split time. Sean Regan, 10 saves on 15 shots, and Spencer Scardino, 9 saves on 13 shots. That's a quality win for St. Mike's.
Wow. That's a big win for St. Mike's. Totally quality win. Good job. Congratulations, fellas. Surprisingly, a little bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see where they go farther on in the NE10 this year. It'll be some good matchups coming on. Okay, Danny, let's move on to our coach's spotlight. Tonight, we get to speak to another coach for the first time. And I'm really excited about this because this program, I have kind of been watching ever since my son started looking at colleges to go to. So probably that's 6 years ago. And so I'm really excited. This coach is in his second year as head coach and really trying to catapult this program, I think, back to where it was probably around 2014 or whatnot. So why don't we just welcome him in, Gage Bradshaw, head coach of Wheeling. Hey, coach.
Hey, how you doing, Harry?
Hey, Coach Bradshaw from Wheeling. Thank you so much for taking the time tonight on a cold and wintry kind of night here and out there where you are. And we really appreciate you taking the time to come on with the two knuckleheads from In the Crease. Appreciate it.
Hey, yeah, I think, you know, any chance to talk across is a great time to speak. So I'm happy to be here.
That's awesome. So let me start off, Coach. You were a graduate assistant at Wheeling in 2021 and then became the interim head coach last year. So tell us how that whole transition into coaching, first of all, and then taking over the reins has been.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, from Texas originally, kind of went through the recruiting pool as a student athlete ago. And for my first 2 years of college, I went out and played for Brian Breck and that group in 2 years. And then ended up transferring and finding my way down to Florida and playing for Jack Holloway. So I got to play for him 2 years. And in that whole time, you know, I knew really early that I wanted to coach. You know, kind of lined up, you know, my major and my degree so that I can make that, you know, route. You know, graduated and found myself to Wheeling as a graduate assistant to get my master's. And the way things kind of unfolded, kind of transitioned into the head coaching position. You know, I've loved it and have loved being here ever since. You know, I was here as an assistant, now as a head coach. You know, it's been awesome, and you've been really bought into these guys in this program, and I've really loved every bit, all through, right out my levels and everything else. It's been awesome. So. Really got my start playing in college and transitioning into
right. being a coach. Yeah. So let me ask you that. You know, you were at Rutgers, mm-hmm. transitioned down to Jacksonville, two really good D1 programs, but you go from mm-hmm. Florida back up to West Virginia. You say you love it. So what do you love about Wheeling and West Virginia there?
Yeah, I just think it's one of those places where, you know, there's so many hidden things to discover. You know, we're about 45 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, right? You know, we're in that little sliver. Think of us as that main part of the state. And we're actually way more north, whereas north as you can get in the state. And, you know, with Columbus being so close and Pittsburgh being so close and Cleveland being away. And I think it kind of brings all that culture into one city. Now, kind of that just blue collar thing, you know, the guys that we try and bring in represent that. And I think, you know, that's what I love about it. Is that you'd never really think about and really discover, you know, until you go out of your way to find it and then kind of see like, wow, this is awesome. There's a lot to do here. There's a lot to get into. There's a lot to explore. On top of just the beautiful nature and the big hills and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot different from Florida, though. It's a lot different from Florida.
Yeah, a little bit different weather, a little bit more snow up here.
Yeah, no palm trees. No palm trees in West Virginia.
Hey, palm trees.
That's right.
Okay.
You just have to start to embrace the winter sports, Danny. That's all. That's all you have to do.
I don't like them.
So, Coach, as I've watched over the last several years, it seems that there's been a lot of turnover at Wheeling. Now, we've seen the same sort of thing at schools like Shorter and Young-Harris. And talking to those coaches recently, one of the things they're really excited about is trying to bring that stability back to the program. I assume that's obviously – you went from graduate assistant to interim head coach. So you're kind of already bought in and trying to bring that stability to the last couple of years. So talk to me about that and how you think that can really help catapult this program, as I talked about in the intro.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about as coaches all the time, bought in, buy in the process, trust the process. And then, you know, you see guys leave or go elsewhere for power to them. But you know, I'm a big loyalty guy. And so when I got my opportunity, you know, at first it was like, hey, these guys are going to want someone that's bought into them as much as they are into playing. And so that's what I sit down and say, hey, you know what, I'm bought in here. You know, show my guys not only what I was representing as myself, you know, my belief system and, you know, my culture standards, like, hey, this is what needs to happen is this buy-in. And I think, you know, it starts with me as a head coach, you know, representing what really the opportunity that, you know, was afforded to me, allowed me to do. I'm here to lead these guys in the right direction. And I think when they see that buy-in they're working for, you know, you get a lot better buyback from the players, right? You know, you get a lot of better.
Without a doubt.
I think that was kind of the point.
And you know what? You're in the GMAC. Tough conference, the GMAC. Let's talk about the GMAC a little bit. Tell us your thoughts on the GMAC.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think, you know, the GMAC is a really tough conference. You know, you got great programs. You know, it's a good mix. Right. I think we're all over the levels of different types of lacrosse that make it a competitive league. You know, I think that's what you want to be competitive. You want to play great programs. And I think the GMAC is a great place to do that.
I agree. I agree with you. I love the GMAC. It's a nice blue collar, tough weather guys that get after it in the cold and the snow. They're brushing off the snow in the field for practices and stuff. I give you guys a lot of credit for that because there's a lot of kids down in the South going, damn, I'm sure glad I didn't go to school up north, you know, because they see the snow. Yeah. But you know what? I give credit to you guys for doing that because it's not an easy thing. It's a tough thing. And getting on the road, those bus trips, and it's tough, GMAC. So how many guys you got on the roster this year, Coach?
Right now for this 23 season. Stuff going on though, right? You know, you battle through injuries, trying to get back, you know, guys healthy and all that. Final number is 36. So we have 36 guys on the roster.
Okay.
Yeah, that's better than some other teams we know. You've got some sort of depth and you can build from there. But I have to ask you this. You mentioned kind of Alderson Broaddus. And Coach, we had Coach Maloney on, and he talks about winning the state of West Virginia amongst the GMAC between you, Alderson Broaddus, and Davis and Elkins. So is that like a goal of yours too? Is it like we're going to win the West Virginia Cup? Because I'm tuning into those games. I don't want to see who wins the cup.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's awesome. You know, I think share those same little rivalries before. Like when I was at Rutgers, you know, we had the rivalry with Princeton, and you know those cups and those battles and the win in the state. You know, in Jacksonville. So, you know, we're the only D1 team down in Florida, so we didn't really get to have that little rivalry. And then, you know, to kind of have an in-state rivalry again was pretty cool. You know, I think Alderson Broaddus and D&E ended programs, and you know, both have head coaches that really want to push the success timeline, you know, for their best. And so, I think it is fun to get to those games and realize, like, hey, we're playing for the state. You know, we're saying that, hey, we get to be one of the better teams in the state. Yeah. I think dynamic to our games, right? You know, and I think it's awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, that's cool. That is really cool. That is really cool. So let me ask you this, Coach. So you're basically a D1 guy from a player, but you're a D2 coach. So talk to us about what do you think the advantages of going D2 is for student athletes?
You know, I think the Division II level, like it's like, you know, I've seen both sides. I think financially, you know, I think there's a better opportunity for level depending on your talent. You know, I think you have a higher opportunity to get a little bit more money compared to what you'd get at the Division I level, depending on your skill set, your academics. You know, obviously three that doesn't have any athletic scholarship, you know, we're kind of in that middle ground, right?
Right.
You know, we have to work with that opportunity and maybe give a little bit more depending on skill sets at and, you know, what the coaches are looking for at this level. I think you're going to play some great talent, and you may get on the field a little bit earlier at the Division II level than maybe Division I level. And again, it all comes down to skill set, you know, academics, culture, you know, what your role, what program you go to. I think there's a little bit higher opportunity to get on the field a little bit earlier than what program you're at, because there are more programs that are looking for guys that are hungry to get on the field in Division II level or a little bit higher. And I think they're a little bit more abundant at the Division II level.
You know, yeah, Kevin and I both had sons that played in the Division II level. And I just think you get more bang for your buck, I think, financially at the Division II level. And like you said it, you get to play. You might get to see that field earlier than you might if you went to a Division I program. And you know what? If you're going to, you know, go through the summer youth programs and the travel teams and pay that kind of money to get recruited, you know, go to those prospect days that you might, why not go and play? Why not go to a place where you can play? Why would you want to get up at 5:30 and do runs and lifts and not even get on the field? And then the Division I level, you don't get to travel with the team. They might just take, you know, 40 guys. They're not going to take all 62 guys that's on the Division I team. So I love Division II, and what it's been able to do for me and my family and my kids has been phenomenal. And that's why Kevin and I kind of do this podcast. We don't think that Division II gets the love that they should get. And, you know, we get to talk to coaches like you who's got that Division I pedigree, and you're bringing that knowledge to the Division II level. And that's goes on a lot more than people might think that goes on in the Division II level. Would you agree?
Yeah. You know, from what I can see here, and, you know, obviously I think I'm a little bit spoiled, the conference that I'm in, you know, that have incredible talent, you know, and I think that's something that gets overlooked. And obviously your Division I's Division I for a reason. Don't get me wrong. Been around those players, but there's some guys that can play, man, at the Division II level and can really get after it. And I think and be able to compare my experiences as player, as coach, and there's some guys that can really, you know, get out and get after it. And you're starting to see, you know, in the PLL, you know, there's guys.
Oh yeah,
Division II guys that are kind of, you know, getting into that realm and playing at that high of a caliber.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think it's you know, something that you said, you get more bang for your buck, right? You know, if you maybe think, hey, I can go to one of these D1 programs, maybe I see the field, maybe it's really up to the athlete, you know, at that point. But, you know, if you maybe want a higher chance to, you know, get on the field, play and make those travel rosters and, you know, make that difference on a roster and a team.
Right.
Two is four, right? You know, D2 is for those guys that just want to make an impact and want to play and, you know, walk away. It's this experience. And I did, you know, make a difference in where I was at.
Yeah, Coach, that's great. So we talked at kind of in my aviator speak at the 20,000 foot level talking D2. Let's go down almost to the ground level. Talk to me. You talked about culture fit and everything else. So tell us what you're trying to build there at Wheeling from a culture player standpoint, where you're kind of driving to for goals for your team. It doesn't have to be something specific, but just kind of give the overall flavor of what you're trying to build for Wheeling and what you're trying to do with your players.
Yeah, I think, you know, our big team motto is like one step at a time, right? And I think we talk about is just being able to control what you can control and understand that, oh, we continue to get better. You know, as we continue to get better, we continue to compete. I think for us, you know, it's been a rebuild, you know, in 2020, kind of, you know, pushing the envelope on excellence is what we're really trying to do. And I think people, you know, understand that this was going to take time, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Our guys bought into as well that, hey, you know, it starts with the culture first. You know, first we got to represent, you know, our culture standards, our identity. You know, we got to understand who we are that every year, you know, day in, day out. So I think as a team bought into the long haul and really bought into this is a, you know, long process. But I think the entire team, including myself and my assistant, always like, hey, why can't we push the gas pedal on that? You know, how can we kind of keep pushing our foot to the, you know, every day, every month, every year on how we can accelerate the process? You know, what do we got to do?
Right.
What events do we need to go to? What teams do we need to schedule to make ourselves look more competitive and more ideal, you know, playing the tougher teams and, you know, making those tough that we're showing our best effort and really getting, you know, diamonds out of pressure. Right.
Right.
And I think that's what we're really living in is, hey, you know, how do we kind of push that envelope and get it done? And I think that's really what the identity of this team is we'd rather push than take the easy route out and really, you know, make sure that we're pushing the envelope on success.
Yeah, you know, you not only are the GMAC, but you talked about that schedule. You're out of conference schedule, Frostburg and Lewis. And you know what? You're putting big boys on that schedule, and that's good. That's great. And then you got the GMAC. You're going to have Seton Hill. You're going to have Mercyhurst. You're going to have those big boys. And you know what? Like you said, comes out of pressure comes the diamond. You know, you sharpen the irons. You know what? And these kids learn, and they learn the NCAA game, and they play at that level. And you only get better by doing that, Coach. You can't swim if you ain't in the bay. You know what I'm saying? So I think your kids are in a good spot. You got a couple of wins underneath your belt already this year. You're playing in that weather, and I wish you the best of luck in the rest of the season, Coach. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Wheeling could do. I honestly haven't watched Wheeling yet this year. I usually catch a game. I try to catch as many games as I can, you know, for the podcast. And and because I have no life and I love lacrosse, so I watch a lot of lacrosse. And I watch D1 too, but a lot of D2. So I'm going to be keeping my eye out for Wheeling. It was really nice of you to come on tonight. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, 100%. And like I said, anytime to talk lacrosse and support and the love of the game, I'm all there for it.
Right.
I was more than happy to come on, and this was awesome.
Thanks so much.
All right. Well, let's move on to the games to watch this week, Danny. Who do you got?
Kevin, there's a few games to watch, you know, and it's not always the big dogs, but we're definitely going to watch a couple of big dog games this
week.
Bet.
Some good ones. There's coming some up. Coming up.
But you know what? The first one that's coming, I want to watch is Duville Bridgeport game, the battle of the two new programs. And Duville's got two wins under their belt in this year. They're just playing
their second season. Yep. Right.
They're improving. Yep. And Bridgeport's their first year. So you know what?
This and they've got a win too.
One of those games.
So yeah.
That's right. That's
could
right.
Could be a really good game.
It could be one of those games, you know, that you never expect, you know. So I like that game. Who do you like?
So I think you've got this on your list too. I've got Mercyhurst UIndy on Saturday. That's number two against number eight. You know, Mercyhurst has just been handling everyone this year. And UIndy,
yep.
like you and I talked about off podcast, they've got one loss and they want to stay in the top. Now they're playing a higher ranked team, but still they're going to want this one to keep rolling for the NCAAs.
Yeah. A loss for, you know, UND could hurt them a little bit for sure. So that's a good big game, but you know what? UND's got to go into Mercyhurst and that's not an easy thing to do.
No, you know, it is not. So. All right. Who else?
So that's going to be a good game to watch. Okay. Another, an any 10 game, Kev. I'm interested to see St. Anselm's and Lemoyne, because last year, 100%. Those were great games. I think, you know, I think that's going to be a real good matchup and could have ramifications in any 10 in conference play and tournament time. I think that both these teams are good enough that they could be in it at the end of the year to make a run at the NCAAs. So this is two of the top tier teams getting after it, and it's a conference game. So I like Lemoyne and St. Anselm's.
Yeah, and St. A's handled Bentley fairly easily. So
yeah,
they haven't really beaten Lemoyne, and I know they want to. Let's see what they can do this year. Another game I've got on Saturday, Danny, is Lewis against Alabama Huntsville. Lewis is on a roll at 5-1. We already talked about them in week in review, as well as the Chargers. They're at 6-2. They just beat Maryville. We talked about it. They're playing Rockhurst this week. It'll be already done when the podcast is out. But they have to go to Lewis for this game. So this will be an interesting game. This will be a really interesting game.
Yeah, that should be a good one. And that would be Saturday.
Yeah.
Right. So then we got games Sunday and Monday of next week. So what do you think? Tampa and Colorado Mesa get after it.
Without a doubt.
That's a game to watch. Coming out east. They're coming out east. Again, I think they're a good team. Dylan Checkett's at the faceoff dot. He's as good as anybody else in the country. And I think he's going to make it an interesting game. We'll see how Tampa plays against a good Colorado Mesa team. Especially at the faceoff, you know, that's huge, you know.
Yeah, can they do what Frostburg State did? I think they've got the talent to be able to do it, but I also think Tampa gets burnt once. It's going to be tough to get them again. It'll be a good matchup. Another game I've got, Danny, is on Tuesday, the 21st, and that's Post against Malloy. Coach Jez against Coach Dunn. You can't not watch this game. You got to pull this game up.
Nah. Two legends in Division II as coaches, as far as coaches go. Great guys, great programs, both of them improved. You know, we knew that they were going to take their bumps in the first couple of years, you know, until they get their guys in. But you know what? It's the two old dogs going at it. So it should be interesting.
Yeah.
And they're neighbors, you know what I mean? They're neighbors, these two schools. There's only about, 8-10 miles that separate the two schools. So.
That's a good little rivalry. I love it.
Yeah.
I've got a couple others just to mention, just because I think they could be of interest. And that's on Saturday is Malone against Davis and Elkins. You know, Malone's having a pretty good season. Davis and Elkins is still trying to get going on the upswing here, but that could be a really good matchup. And then on Wednesday, the 22nd, is Walsh against Lake Erie. Now, before Malone came into the GMAC, this was the battle for Ohio between Walsh and Lake Erie. Lake Erie usually comes up on top. Walsh 2 years ago did win. So it'll be interesting to see if Coach Skavarch can come out there and beat Lake Erie this year. And it's at their field. So that should be interesting. And then finally, Danny, on Wednesday, also the 22nd, is Mercy Bentley, ECC versus any 10. Bentley lost to St. A's. They don't want to lose again against Mercy, but you know, Mercy's stacked. So I give the nod to Mercy on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give the nod to Mercy on that one. So who do you like in the Malloy post game? That's a pick'em.
That is a pick'em. That is a pick'em. If you go by record, you might say Malloy. I think Malloy's got one or two more wins, but I think you're right. I think that's a pick'em. I don't think I can choose that one.
I'm going to go with Coach Dunn and Malloy I think they're going to pull it out.
I'm probably leaning that. I'm leaning that way a little bit too.
Okay, what do you think about the DeYouville Bridgeport game? Who do you like in that one?
I'm going to say DeYouville.
Yeah, me too, man. I like them. They're on a little roll now. Let's
they
get
are.
Going, DeYouville.
They
Let's
are.
Get rolling, boys. And Bridgeport, you know what? You're in for a game. That should be a good one.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, Coach Tempone there really brought in some senior guys, and it'll be a battle for both. But I'm going to give the nod to DeYouville.
Okay. All right. In the Lemoyne St. A's game, who do you like in that game?
I hate to say it, but I'm going to go
Lemoyne's Lemoyne.
Home. It's home.
Lemoyne's it's home.
Lemoyne. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to see St. A's play one more before that, you know? I'd like to see them play one more time, but I think I'm going to give the edge to Lemoyne on this one, only because I've kind of seen Lemoyne play a couple of times. I really haven't seen St. A's play that much at all this year. They only have two games under their belt. So
yeah,
I'm going to give the edge to Lemoyne. And last but not least, what do you think of that Mercyhurst Uindy game? That's going to be a good game, I think.
That could be a pick'em, but I'll tell you what, I think Mercyhurst is they're playing at home. I have to give the nod to Mercyhurst.
Tell you, man, Uindy's a scary good team, man.
They
can do a lot of good things. They have great LSM play. They have great short stick D midi play. Their defense is stout. Their offense, they like to get out and transition. They like to run. They like to get out quick. They got a couple of Canadians that can bury that biscuit, man. And just Uindy's a scary team. You know what I mean? Like,
so are you? Look at are you? Go, are you going that way?
I like Mercyhurst.
I think it's a pick'em. I think that could be like the post Malloy game. That could be a pick'em.
Yeah, I like Mercyhurst. Yeah, that's it. I think those are some good games. And another good week of quality lacrosse, Kevin, across the board. There were some great games. You know, we had the top 10 roundup. Want to see Adelphi play somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I think the country wants Adelphi to play somebody.
You need to call up Coach Purdy then. Come on, man. Their schedule's already set, man.
Well, it's been a good week. We got another good week coming up. Friday, St. Patty's Day, Kev, you know.
The town they call Belfast, apprentice to trade up and down.
Your Black Velvet Band for the listeners.
Sweet happiness have I spent in that beautiful town.
Sing it with us.
My life they shine like the diamonds. Which
I love St. Patrick's Day, one of my favorite holidays. And it's really cool in New York. They do a great thing with the parades and the cops and the firemen. They just really get into it on St. Patrick's Day. So happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there, and especially our Irish listeners and all the people that wish they were Irish.
Kevin O'Stenstrom. All right. Now on to the player spotlight.
My favorite part, Kev, my favorite part. And tonight's going to be even more favoriter than usual.
Yeah, this is going to be great. We usually have just one player on to discuss, you know, his play during the season. But after about a week ago, we witnessed David taking down Goliath, which required a total team effort. So we decided we can't just bring on one player. We have to bring on several across the spectrum, defense, offense, special teams. So we're going to bring them on. We're going to talk about that game and also just their season so far and their team. So what do you say? Should we just bring them in?
Let's bring them in, Kev.
Okay, so from the Frostburg State Bobcats, goalie Mitch Meckley, defenseman Seamus Kearney. You're Irishman there, Danny.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, love the Irishman. I love the Irish. I do.
And then attackman, Bubba Love, best name in D2 lacrosse.
Oh, hands down.
Hey, hands guys, how you down. Doing tonight?
The best name in all of Division II, Bubba Love. How does it go through life with that kind of name? Tell me, Bubba.
It'd be tough, you know. No, it's good. It's good.
No, look at you, man. You look like a movie star, man. With a name like Bubba Love, you must be killing it, dude.
Trying to.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so Mitch, let me ask you a question. Let me get your perspective on the Tampa game. How did you guys prepare? What did you do to execute so well? And just, you know, just give us a feeling for how that, you know, did you really have feel like when you walked out there into that stadium that you had a chance to win? And then how did it feel at the end? So just several questions and just give us your perspective.
Yeah, that's kind of a loaded question. But yeah, we go out to every game believing we can win. We knew we were facing a tough team out there with Tampa, really talented, filled with athletic kids from top to bottom. But we go out to every game thinking we really have a chance to win that game, whether it's Tampa or this week, we're focused on St. Thomas Aquinas. So we go into these games with that same mindset. And as far as preparation for that game, it really started Monday with our focus on our end of the ball, the defensive end of the ball being effect, really pressing them out, really getting on the hands, making them uncomfortable, not letting them get set up in their offense and just have their way with us. So that was a focus from Monday to Friday. And we did a good job implementing that with our dark side, what we call our defense, all the way down to our scout team giving us a great look at what Tampa likes to run.
That's awesome. And you guys did a great job of pressing out and not letting them get. I mean, they were down to, I think it was like 29 shots for the game. I mean, that was just incredible. I've never seen Tampa held there. So you guys definitely executed well. So Seamus, since that Tampa game, you've obviously had a couple more wins. You've continued the streak. You beat Malone and you beat Wall. So talk about what you do as a team to kind of keep that momentum going.
Really, as a team I can't say it any better than, like, we stay as a team. Like, we are always together. Our coach makes it clear, like, whenever you see anybody on the campus, there's two guys together. It's two or three guys always together in a group. We are never not together. And, I mean, every single day we have a new practice plan, incorporating something new, getting, like, ready for the week. And our focus at the end of the day is beating that team and finding a way to win our way. And that's our main focus.
Well, defensively against that Tampa game, I just felt that you guys were just really wreaking havoc, making them uncomfortable. And you did a great job on that defensively. But Bubba, on the offensive side, what was the mindset going in on the offensive side into that game? Because I felt that Frostburg moved the ball well, real well that game. And you guys were getting really super duper high percentage shots. I mean, you kept moving the ball, moving the defense. Was that one of the things you were looking at to do going into that game?
Yeah, honestly, all we can practice, it was just like, to start, it was about us, play our game. And then we set a game plan of what we wanted to do. And then from there on, it was just execute. Don't let them rev us up and play the way we like to play.
Well, you guys played real well offensively. I just felt like, you know, because Ulmer in goal is one of the best in the country, if not, you know, one of the best, top three anyway. And you guys were giving him a hard time. You were getting those open looks, like really right in front of the cage, with super duper high percentage shots. And how did you feel at halftime? What were your thoughts, Seamus? What was your thought at halftime? Like, you're a sophomore, you're a young guy, man. So here you are.
He doesn't know any better, like the other guys. He's just, you know, he's just having fun.
No, Seamus, what were you thinking at halftime? Like, oh, man, my God, we're playing good or what?
I was so happy. Like, I was ecstatic. I remember last year during halftime when we were getting beat pretty bad by them. Everybody was down in the dumps. But this year, we're like, just keep going. Like, don't let up. Because, I mean, the second that we would have let up, we would have started having issues. But we kept our foot on their throats and just kept going.
Yeah, it was interesting in that game that I saw a couple times, and we said that on this podcast last week, that there. I'll tell you guys right now, every time I saw Tampa score on a, you know, in transition, unsettled goal, I'm like, all right, now they woke up. Here they come. But realistically, I think your defense was set to not let them get that running going, like just really keep them from in a 6-on-6 game. Mitch, was that part of it? Or, I mean, because every time that they did that and they had a transition, they didn't get another one for lots of minutes later.
Right. So And I think that really starts in the with Greg and Alex and Drew Downing winning faceoffs, getting possession for us. They did
a good job
that game. We had the ball in offense where we either use the whole 80 and ride like heck to get it back, or use the whole 80, score. And by the time we rode real well that game, they got the ball to our end. They weren't getting crazy runouts. We were putting them in our world, as we like to say, having our effect. They weren't getting too many of those transition looks. They had two in the fourth quarter, which we weren't, particularly happy about. But the whole game, we kind of controlled the tempo on offense, and that kind of filed back onto the defensive side of the ball where we could execute our game plan.
Yeah, and Bubba, on offense, that's the same thing I saw. And Mitch, you just said it. I think you were really patient on offense, waiting for the shot to come to you that you had. I mean, like Danny said, you had some on the doorstep with some great passes, but then you guys were moving and you had some good 10-yard outside shots, hands-free, because you finally moved the defense around. Is that what you guys are waiting for? You guys weren't going to rush shots. You were just going to say, okay, we're going to wait till we've got our shot that we want.
Definitely. We just didn't want them to make us feel like uncomfortable or anything, get us out of our groove. We wanted to play as a team, move them, and take the open looks that we got instead of forcing them.
And you guys did a great job of it. I think it was pretty cool to see. I watched the entire game from faceoff to the last second ticked off the clock. And I was like, wow, this Frostburg State team really just made a big mark in the scene here, man. And now you guys are just climbing up the ranks. How's that feel, Mitch? You're the graduate guy. You've been around a while.
Yeah, it's a fun feeling climbing your way up back from D3. I don't think we ever broke the top 20. And when I was a freshman here in D3, I think we received some votes. And then I remember first getting our first top 20 ranking as soon as we came D2. And it's just fun to see as we keep climbing up. I think last year we were preseason number 12, had a bad loss early in the season. I don't think we ever cracked back into the top 20. So it feels good to start the season in the top 20 and just see that number keep shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And we want to and think we can be a top 5 team. So we're just going to keep taking it one game at a time and try to stack those up and get to where we want to be.
Now, right, Seamus, let me ask Seamus a question. Hey, you're a sophomore year. You have a year under your belt. You're in the ECC. Talk to me about the ECC and what that's, playing in that, tough conference is like, Seamus.
It is a really tough conference. There's a lot of gritty, like, the only word that I could say like that would fit all these teams, probably gritty. Like every single team in this conference is very gritty, and
100%.
All those games are going to be, most of those games are typically dogfights. And the one that I'm really focused on this year is, of course, it's going to be Mercy.
Oh yeah,
I've been waiting, chomping at the bit to play those guys again ever since the ECC championship last year.
Yeah, no, that should be a great game, and they're playing well right now. They're stacked, but they got a new coach, so we'll see how it goes. Mercy's been one of those teams that kind of lets teams hang around, so always think about that going into that game. But Bubba, you look smooth as silk, man. Like, you look just chill, hanging out. Your answers are just, like, cool and smooth. You made one of the best plays I ever saw last year, I think, against Wilmington. It was like a great behind, turned around in the air, like last second shot. I don't know if you remember that. It was a pretty crazy shot. I remember telling Kevin, you have to see what this kid did on the field. It was like a last second shot. Like, and you went, you just, it was a long pass. You took it, like, you did a spin move, like, I don't know, man. It was like pretty cool. And you just turned around and buried the biscuit. I was like, holy crap, look at that shot.
I don't exactly remember that one.
But I knew you were going to say that. You put me out there and you could have just went with it, Bubba. You could have just went with it.
I appreciate the compliment.
you guys are very fun to watch, and especially this year, because I have to say, last year I had you in our preseason poll in the top 20, and you kind of disappointed me. And I know it was disappointing for you guys last year. So, Mitch, what is the difference this year from last year, you think, that you just seem to have your team just seems to be clicking together better?
I think we said it. I don't know if we said it yet, this one, but I heard a coach say it in the last one he was in a couple of weeks ago. It's just the bought inness and the togetherness. So everything we're doing is together. We're excited about getting up and going to lift. We're excited to go to practice. We're excited to watch film. We even, you know, everything we do is together. We have movie nights. We go to the Chinese buffet down the road together. Everything we do is together, and we're all bought in with one goal in mind.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, Coach likes to, one of my favorite things Coach likes to say is we're a group of 50 odd individuals, 52, 53 individuals who have come together to come to one common goal. And that's what I think is really cool, is we all are unique, but we all have one goal in mind, and we're doing that together.
Well, hats off to you, Mitch. You really got the boys humming out there. They look great. Frostburg sits in a really good position. You got a couple of teams coming up that, quite frankly, you could probably take care of business. You got Seton Hill coming up in a few weeks, then Mercy, then a new and improved Malloy team with Coach Dunn over there. He's doing a great job with Malloy. So, you know, and then you got Roberts Wesleyan, who doesn't suck. They don't suck, you know. So the ECC is tough. You got a couple of nice, good games on the schedule. And you know what, fellas? I wish you nothing but luck. You guys have been great and fun to watch so far this year. And Seamus, I love the Irishman, man. Irishmen come first in my house. You know, it's St. Patty's Day, too, coming up Friday. What do you got going on?
Well,
he's got practice, Danny. Practice.
Oh, he's got the 24-hour rule. I know. I forgot about that. The 24-hour. No, it's all good. And Bubba, you got the best name in Division II. We say it on the podcast all the time. And you're just balling out this year. And I wish you guys nothing but the best for the rest of the season. I think you guys could make a lot of noise if you keep playing keep doing what you're doing, man. I think you got a real legitimate shot to make some noise.
But you know what, Danny? All three of these guys are studs at their positions. But I don't know how they're going to be able to hang with the firing round.
Oh, the firing round. 10 questions, fellas. We're going to go
through
a bunch of quick questions. Just give me your quickest answer. We'll start with Bubba. Xbox or PlayStation?
PlayStation.
Mitch, Xbox or PlayStation?
Xbox.
Seamus?
Gotta be Xbox.
Xbox. Bubba, morning bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Mitch?
Morning.
Seamus?
Night owl.
Bubba, favorite cartoon as a kid?
SpongeBob.
Pineapple
under the sea. There we go. What about you, Mitch? Favorite cartoon as a kid?
SpongeBob.
Seamus, don't say SpongeBob. Come up with something different.
Yeah, I'm trying to think for you. I'm going to go with Phineas and Ferb. I'm young.
Phineas and Ferb.
All right. Cool, Seamus. All right, Bubba, mom's best meal.
Gotta be the meatloaf.
Meatloaf. Mitch.
I was gonna say meatloaf, but my mom makes a pretty good Thanksgiving meal, like the whole platter. The Thanksgiving.
That sounds good. And Seamus,
meal. My mom will love this. Easily, it's gotta be your spaghetti and meatballs. Absolutely crazy. She's taught me the recipe. I make it all the time. It's electric.
Shout out to electric.
Shout out to Kimberly.
That's great. Shout out to Kimberly. All right, cool. Bubba, favorite type of music?
Country.
Country. What was the last song you listened to?
Oh, that I don't know.
Okay, Mitch, favorite kind of music?
I'm on a classic rock kind of.
My man.
Yeah, I'm into that right now.
What was the last song you listened to?
Classic rock song?
Yeah.
American Girl, Tom Petty.
Oh, okay. I play in a band and we play that song and I freaking hate it. I hate it every time I play that song. The guitar player always looks at me. He's like, you hate this song. I was like, oh, I dread this song. But
it's my karaoke song.
Okay, there you go. Seamus, your favorite music?
I'm going to be honest with you. I like all kinds of music. But the last song I listened to was I'm Still Standing by Elton John.
Great
song. Walking to practice, listening to that.
All right, cool. There you go, Seamus. I like your style, kid. Bubba, what was the question I was going to say? Oh, favorite class at Frostburg State?
Oh, Ori.
Say that again.
It was easy.
That is not what your mother and father want to hear, dude. You're on a national podcast right now. Come up with something, you guys.
Yeah, you got to get the A's, though, you know?
Ah!
All right. Mitch, your favorite class at Frostburg. So since you're a graduate student, but, you know, you've been there a while.
Probably my circuit design class.
Circuit design? You're an electronics engineer? Electric engineer?
Yeah, electrical engineer.
Oh, very good. Very good. And Seamus, so far, what was your favorite class?
Probably got to go with Economics 352 with Oleg Kutcher.
Okay.
Cool dude.
All right. Shout out to Oleg.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
All right. This is great so far. Bubba, who's the one kid on your team you'd never let date your sister?
Warren Evans.
The other guys are laughing. All right. Mitch, who is the funniest guy on the team?
Luke McCullough, hands down.
Luke, look, that was a quick response. Yeah. I got some nods from the other guys, too.
Yeah, yeah, hands down.
Seamus, who's the most athletic player on the team? Like one of those guys that can just like do it all, man. Darts, bowling, ping pong, gets out on the field.
You're going to like this answer, too. It's Luke McCullough.
Oh no!
His nickname, a double for Luke McCullough.
The freak. That's his nickname. The freak gets a shout out there, Danny.
Well, fellas, that's all I got for you guys tonight. You did great in the firing round. You guys have been a great guest tonight. Frostburg's in good hands with you guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show tonight. We really hope you had a lot of fun.
It was a great time. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. I had a blast.
Danny, I'm so glad we had a team effort for the player spotlight this week.
Yeah, those guys were fun. That was a good idea to get all three of them on. What a great, great group of guys. You know, Coach Garleman's got a good group there. They're excited to be where they are. Especially Mitch Meckley, the graduate senior. Been there since it was Division III and has seen the transformation. Yeah. And now he's looking, you know, in the top 15 in the country and they're playing well. It was good to get those guys on. And I wish them all the best of luck. I like Frostburg State. I like that school. Yeah. I like the whole vibe of it. It's just, it's kind of cool. They were good guests.
So now before we close out, I think you've got some shout outs and I've got some shout outs. You want to start it off?
Yeah, got a couple quick shout outs. You know, Kev, we were at the Crown Classic last week and had a couple of DMs from a guy, John Beachley. He's a limestone dad, loves the podcast, came over, said, I want to meet you, DM'd me. I said, come on over. So we hung out, we talked, we shook hands, we talked about. He came up to me after the game. Hey, John, it was great to meet you. Your son's a great player out there. And, keep going. It was good to meet you, John Beachley, and the entire Del Grosso family who came down to North Carolina to see their son Nick play at the Limestone for Limestone at the Crown Classic. Jerry and I go way, way back, Kev, since we were apprentices together
in
the Electrical
gosh.
Union. We were apprentices together.
That's at least 10 years ago.
Back in 19, none of your business. Okay. So. And his wife, Jeannie, is a Rockaway Beach girl. We grew up, so I know Jeannie, and they're great people, and they had their kids there, young Gerard and their daughter, Claire. So it was really cool to see them. And Jeannie loves the podcast, and she's a big lax girl, Kev. She's a lax mom.
Love
big
it.
Time.
Love it.
Big shout-out to DeUville for winning that second game. Been program beating Felician 16-9. Good job, guys. Shout-out to Dan Zabia. The attackman for Pace had 11 goals, 1 assist, 3 ground balls, and 4 cross turnovers in 1 week. Not too bad, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And I want to shout out to Eric George, attackman for Chawan. Guess what, Kev? He's got 100 career points at Chawan. So congratulations, that's Eric. Awesome. Good job.
That's awesome. All right, I've got a few shout outs myself. The first one, because I'm in Hawaii, it's a shout out to the Aloha Youth Lacrosse Association, AYLA. So I was talking to some critical players that play for the AYLA in a couple different age groups, and that is their brothers, Jude Munter and Paul Munter. And they've got some interesting, they're not only players, Danny, they've got some interesting coaching strategies. It has to do with sticks and piccolos and flutes and wearing cleats that fall apart. Now you just have your socks on and you're still playing defense. It's kind of convoluted, but it works here in the Ohana of Hawaii. That's my first shout out. Second shout out has to go out to Dexter Tuimala. He's actually one of the front desk guys here at the Hilton that I'm staying at. I give him a shout out because he's helped me try to find a room to do the podcast in because my wife was working at the same time. And I went to the printer to print out my notes for this and the printer wasn't working. And he's like, dude, just send me to my work email. I'll print it off for you. So that's a kind of aloha spirit that Dexter has. So I have to give him a shout out. And lastly,
that's Danny, awesome.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I'm going to send him the link to the podcast, and he can now spread it across this great island.
Yeah, Dexter. You got a big shout out, national podcast, all the way to Long Island, dude. Good job.
And now, finally, I think what we need to do is just tell our listeners a little tease here. We got a little surprise coming next week that will be very interesting as we move forward as a podcast. So I'm telling all our listeners right now, you need to stay tuned, spread the word. I think it'll be really interesting. Don't you agree, Danny?
You mean we have an exciting announcement to make?
That's right.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to getting the opportunity to share that with our listeners when the time comes.
So with that, Danny. That's a wrap.
Relations betrayed by the black velvet band. Let's hear you sing now.
Arise, they shine like diamond. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all our listeners out there. And to you, Mr. Kevin Ostenstrom. Hey, and that's a wrap.